This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast that takes a look at the week that was in Bates Athletics. My name is Aaron Morrison. This week we chat with Bates Associate AD for Athletic Performance, Nick Cook, as March is National Athletic Training Month. Plus, our Bobcats of the Week come from the baseball and softball diamonds, and the swimming teams turned in strong performances at the NCAA Championships. All that and more coming up on the Bates Bobcast. Bates sent 13 swimmers to last week's NCAA Championships in Greensboro, North Carolina. The Bates women's team finished 18th out of 40 schools that scored points at NCAAs, the ninth straight time the Bobcats have finished in the top 20 in the country. Meanwhile, the men's team finished 34th out of 43 schools that scored points. Head coach Peter Casares recaps the four-day meet.
Well, Coach, obviously the four-day NCAA Championships are always an exciting meet, a competitive meet, best in the country in D3. Take us through kind of how it went from your perspective. Obviously, a number of strong results. Women ended up getting 18th in the country, two better than last year. But take me through kind of like your major takeaways from the meet.
I always get there and am startled by the end of day two of the meet and how exhausting it is. And I will write down notes, you know, each year to like prepare ourselves for it and talk about it. But you don't really remember it until you're living it. And we got there, you know, Monday, and we got adjusted on Tuesday, and then the meet started Wednesday. And then Thursday, just a big, long session. So we got a lot of swims under our belts in the first 2 days and saw some really good performances and some performances that were just slightly off what they did at their NESCAC championship meet. We kind of tried to learn from those, buckle down and go for it. I'd say when it was like all said and done, we had some really wonderful moments. I mean, it was just wonderful seeing Grace Wenger get her top eight finish and be sixth in the country. It was awesome seeing John Weigel break his school record. Marich was just phenomenal in his 100 breaststroke. Our 800 free relays both scored. It was the only the second time our men's 800 free relay has scored, and our women put together one of the most beautiful races I've ever seen. So it was really good on a lot of different fronts. And I think Marge was our first ever 100 breaststroke All-American in program history. So just some really big accomplishments along the way. And then some moments that we went like, okay, next year we're going to have to work on, you know, peaking again, you know, 4 weeks later, 5 weeks later, and how we do that so that it's not just a session or two that go really well, but it's something every session.
Yeah, and you mentioned Marich being the first ever 100 breaststroke men's All-American in Bates history. And, he wasn't seated in All-American positioning and not even close, actually. So how was he able to pull that off?
Well, I think Marich is like, I think his progression curve or like his route to that time was, if you look back at it, a little bit predictable. I mean, he went 55.08 against Colby and Bowden in the CBB championships. And then 2 weeks later, he went 55.06. And so he broke the school record at NESCACs and did really well and went a lifetime best, but it wasn't a big drop like he had seen in his other events, like his 50 and his 200, he had done really well. And so I think he was, you know, getting a chance to swim that event 4 weeks later, really allowed all the things he had worked on to kind of settle and maybe for him to not swim with so much expectation. Cause I think when he went so fast at CBB, he expected that 54 to pop up at NESCACs. And then when you get that extra chance, cause he had qualified to swim the race individually with a B cut. So he got to go to nationals and give it one more shot. And he just put together the perfect race going 54.3. And I don't think anybody expected to see that. I think we were all thinking 54 high. But 54.3 was a huge drop, and I think it was due after the work that he put in and how fast he had swum in season. And I just think he needed that extra rest. On the flip side, you know, we saw some of our boys that really peaked at NESCACs and rested perfectly for that one and really just had a hard time coming back and replicating those exact times again.
Gotcha. And then take us through that women's 800 freestyle relay race. So they got 10th. It was not a school record, but you said it was maybe the best race you've seen in quite some time, if ever. So what made it such a great race from your perspective?
Yeah, so the 800 free relay is a different beast completely at Nationals. When we go to NESCAC, it's the first event of the whole week. We get right there Thursday, we jump in the water. Everyone's 100% fresh. No one's had a bad swim. No one's had an exhausting race. It's just you're primed and ready to go. And so I think we've had, you know, like at NESCAC, our women's 800 free relay was a beautiful race. Don't get me wrong. But what we saw at Nationals, and it's the third day of the meet, and it's after two exhausting sessions, to see the women jump up in the morning. And they raced, you know, 9th through 16th, the heat of 9th through 16th. And so whoever won that race really had a good shot at heading into the top eight world and being on the podium. And so there's a lot in the line in that morning race. And they dove in, and Grace, you know, led it off a hair slower than her individual event. It was her third one of the weekend and the third one of, you know, in the last 24 hours. And I was just really happy with how she swam it, because she was probably in fourth or fifth at the 100. And then over the last, you know, four lengths, passed everybody to touch the wall first. And then right after her, I believe it was Natalie Young that jumped in. And then she did the same thing. Like a couple other teams bursted out with speed and took off. And she flipped at the wall halfway through the race in second or third. And then on the last 50 came back and passed all those people and touched first again. And then Sophie Cassily, same exact thing. Like people passed her on the first 100 and then she repassed them on the second one. And when you see that happening over and over again, you're like, you know, it's really easy to get caught up in the, just in the excitement of the race and to go out fast and die at the end. And it's hard not to do that at a big championship meet, because you're so amped up and so ready to swim for your teammates and your team. And each one of them went out very aggressively, but also with a sense of control so that they could come home and give their next person a chance to be great, with a great relay exchange. And so I was just unbelievable to watch the back and forth play out in front of us, and for them to kind of dive in and lose it, then come back and win it. And it was happening, and all the way till Steph Tropper at the end. I mean, she dove in, and I think it was Tufts in the far lane had a sprinter in there that just took off and like was 2 seconds ahead of her. And then they were only a second ahead of her. And then when she touched the wall, they were only a tenth ahead of her. And she had really just like started climbing back into it and doing everything she possibly could. And, you know, we got out touched and got 10th instead of 9th, but it was really a cool moment. And it was just such great, smart swimming. And you rarely see all four women do that at the same exact time. Usually someone's amazing and someone bonks, and they kind of cancel each other out for a solid swim. And this one, it was like four women just swimming a perfect race at the right time at the national meet against the best competition in the country. And that's the ultimate in the sport.
Excellent. I know they do a senior recognition ceremony at NCAAs. What was that like?
That was fun. We line up all the seniors about 15 minutes before Friday's events. And all these coaches come up with flowers and stuffies and animal and like whatever gift they want to give to their seniors at the national meet. And I'm so well, you know, organized and on top of things that I went into the hospitality room and grabbed four shish kebab sticks. And as my athletes came out, I handed them each one a chicken shish kebab on a stick. So they got to walk out onto the bulkhead and get celebrated with a little bit of a meal. And so we had some fun with that. They thought it was hilarious. And I was glad to give them something special that no other team gave them.
What was the inspiration behind that?
Inspiration. Well, what swimmer doesn't like some food, you know, before a big meet? But no, you just like every coach is always like a hug, a handshake, maybe some flowers, maybe a gift. Some parents sometimes get them something and it's like one parting gift. And, you know, I thought it'd be kind of fun to give our athletes something. And instead of, you know, a carnation, I went into the hospitality room for the coaches and brought out a shish kebab.
There you go.
You know, every swimmer loves a stick with some meat on it.
And then I know at NCAAs, oftentimes the NESCAC schools kind of band together and root each other on. What was that environment like this year?
It was great. I mean, we saw some national champions from other NESCAC teams. We had, you know, Middlebury showed up with one girl on our team, and we completely adopted her, and she sat with us, and then we counted for her in her 500 and her mile, and she was All-American in her races. And, you know, just it's really great to have all the teams that compete against each other feel like, hey, we're a special conference. We're the best conference around, and we cheer for each other. We have this respect for each other. We want to see each other succeed when it comes to the NESCAC versus everybody. And I think, you know, some of our restrictions on our playing season and the differences we have in our conference really bind us together. I think the coaches are really close in our conference and always supporting each other. And I think the student athletes just really love getting to nationals and watching what their competitors who now are, you know, somewhat, you know, representing them and their conference are doing. And we also have a sense of pride in it when anybody does well. And so on the last night, all the teams get together and they do a big NESCAC cheer in the corner. And it's quite impressive to see, you know, so many athletes from one conference coming together and doing a NESCAC like team cheer. They spell out NESCAC, they yell NESCAC, and then they all come together and jump up and down in a circle. And it really just puts a nice kind of finishing touch on the meet for everybody. And in fact, like this year, we saw a couple other conferences try to do something after they've seen us do this the last 4 or 5 years. And it was pretty sad, pretty sad showing on their part. No one can quite compete with the numbers and the size of the NESCAC. And it's fun to have that going for you.
Excellent. And then I'm just kind of looking back on the season as a whole. You know, obviously both teams got fourth at NESCACs. Both teams had good, strong representation in NCAAs, but what were some major takeaways you had that, you know, will lead us into next year, I guess, as the team continues to develop?
Yeah, I mean, it was a phenomenal year when you look at the whole entire thing from beginning to end and what people accomplished and the amount of lifetime bests our team went this year and the support they had for each other and the fact that, you know, whether you were off to nationals or you were just fighting for a spot at that conference meet and trying to score a point there, everybody seemed to be involved and invested. And that culture is what I think makes for a special year. And we saw that like our kind of true identity this year was, you know, swimming for the team and being a team of many. And that's how I think your best get better. And I think that's how the people that are fighting for a different role on the team feel valued and invested into the program. And we wanted everybody to know we couldn't have got where we got without the whole team as a whole. And I think like we felt that this year, it wasn't just, you know, a certain person or two that really got us there. We saw that we can compete at the national level. I mean, we saw that we have athletes that can win races. And I think we brought in, we're bringing in like a really good group next year and a lot of belief in ourselves, and it should be a good catapult into next season.
All right, Peter Casares, thank you so much for joining us on the Bobcast and recapping another exciting NCAA championships for the swimming and diving program. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Have a great one.
The baseball team headed west and competed at the Tucson Invitational Games last week, going 2-2 in their final tune-ups for NESCAC play, which begins this Friday at Trinity. The Bobcats are 8-5 on the season, and first-year Henry Prince had a breakout week, going 4-for-9 at the plate. He tallied his first collegiate hit on Tuesday against Wesleyan, delivering a pinch hit, 2-RBI triple. Then he followed that up by going 2-for-4 with a double and a run scored and an RBI in a win over Carleton College. To cap off the week, Prince hit his first collegiate home run Friday against Redlands. And he is our male Bobcat of the Week. Well, Henry, first of all, welcome to the Bobcast. Rookie here for the Bates baseball team from Virginia. Tell me a little bit about how Bates got on your radar for college and why you decided to come here.
Yeah, the recruiting process was hard because I was going through it with COVID and everything. You know, at first I was really looking D1. And when I was a senior in high school in 2022, I decided to do a post-grad year at Deerfield Academy in Massachusetts. And it was at that point when I gave Coach Martin a call and set up a visit, and I came here, and I was like, this is it. This is the place I want to go to. Committed like a week later, and that was it. It was a pretty quick process, but I'm so glad I ended up here.
Great. So going to post-grad in New England, that opened you up to kind of the possibility of Bates in Maine, everything. Had you been to Maine before?
Never. Yeah. First time coming to Maine was when I visited, and it was the only time before I came here on the first day of school. So it was a new experience, but I love it here.
Now, this past week in Arizona, you got your first collegiate hit and your first collegiate home run.
Yeah.
The first collegiate hit was a pinch hit, two RBI triple. So take us through that at bat. I believe it was against Wesleyan, right?
Yeah, it was against Wesleyan. Coach Flame, our assistant hitting coach, came up to me. He was like, all right, go get hot. And so I step outside the dugout, start warming up, and time comes around. I get up for my at-bat, step into the box. I'm sitting fastball because I was thinking, you know, I'm in the nine hole. I'm a pinch hitter. But he ended up throwing me a slider, and you know, I just sat, adjusted a little bit, hammered it backside, and off the bat, I was like, oh, I got that good, and just kept carrying. And I was running second, looked over to Coach Flame. He was waving me around, and I was like, I'm taking a triple right here. Slid to third, and that was exciting. I was real excited. Yeah, that was a cool moment.
And then your first home run came a couple days later,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. That was pretty electric. My first at-bat, actually, I stepped up there, and I got buzzed by on, I think, three straight pitches by this guy. He was probably throwing upper 80s, and I hadn't seen any velocity in a couple weeks. But I went back to the dugout and talking to one of my teammates, Theo, and he was like, hey, man, just kind of treat it like you're going up there on the machine, you know, when we do fast machine. I was like, you're right. And second at bat, I got up there, just saw the pitch, and I swung. You know, like I've seen velocity like that before, and obviously I've hit, you know, much faster than that. But, you know, when you go up there after facing, you know, low 80s or something like that, and it's buzzing in, it can seem pretty fast. But the velocity on the pitch helped me a lot. It was up and out, and I took it oppo. It was about, you know, 20 feet inside the right field pole, I think. I felt good off the bat. I was running, you know, 30, 40 feet down the baseline, and realized that I got all of it, and just jogging around was, you know, it just felt pure elation. It was pretty cool.
So opposite field home run.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How big were the dimensions there at the ballpark?
I think it was 354 down right field, and then I don't know center, but down the lines it was 354.
And you're right-handed bat, obviously.
Yeah.
You play first base in the field?
Yeah, first base.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. Have you always been a first baseman?
No, actually, I used to catch. For my four actual years of high school, I was strictly a catcher.
Okay.
And then when I went to Deerfield, they moved me to first, played a couple games there, and then they decided to move me to third. So when I came here, I had very little experience at first base, but I had the hands from catching and from third base, so it was a pretty decent transition for me.
Gotcha. And then, you know, obviously this past week was really your first extended amount of playing time. You played a little bit before for Bates, but what was it like to get on the field, you know, three of the four games and really have a lot of action out there?
So cool because, you know, just spending so much time on the bench, I love it, honestly, just because you get to cheer on your teammates and everything. But being out there, you kind of feel like one of those guys. It's just like it's such a cool feeling knowing that you're representing your school and that you got 20 guys on the bench behind you cheering you on.
You had some wild games this year, too.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, there's that 15-inning game earlier this season.
Oh, yeah.
There's Wesleyan game was 22-11, which is very high scoring.
Yeah,
so what's it like to have some of these crazy games so far?
The 15-inning game was unreal. I mean, it was just getting silly at the end there. Like, we were sitting on the bench. We're like, man, we've been here for like four and a half hours, it feels like, at this point.
Right.
And it just kept going and going. And then obviously Brandon McGain hit that home run, and we were going crazy. We were like, yeah, we pulled it out.
Yeah.
And then the 22-11 game was just, you know, another one of those games where there was a lot of hitting. It was one of the it was a long game. Like, I honestly forget how it got to that point.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun to be a part of it. Those games are fun because you're on the bench like cheering your team on, and at that point, like, you loosen up and everything just because it just keeps going. Going and going.
Now, what's it like getting out there in the Arizona sunshine? Totally different than what the conditions have been ready for the season, right?
I mean, it was really nice. I'm kind of used to it because I've played in Virginia and, you know, played a lot in the South. But I just knew that once I was out there, it was going to be a struggle coming back here. I wasn't wrong at all. Like, we stepped off the bus and it was basically hailing. And I was like, God, I cannot believe 24 hours ago we were in Arizona just hanging out by a pool with flip-flops on. It's ridiculous.
So NESCAC play starts this weekend.
Yeah.
At Trinity, what has Coach said to you guys about, you know, NESCAC play coming up? Because obviously you have 12 games basically in your division. They matter. They're the biggest games of the year, right?
Yeah. Those are the biggest games. Like, we just got to get rolling. We got to get rolling quick with these. And I think we're just going to need to put a lot of our trust in our leaders. like, you know, I've been on the bench most of the season, and I'm super privileged to be able to come out here and help the team. But that said, you know, I'm still going to be looking up towards the seniors and the juniors when we get in, you know, tough situations and stuff like that. And it's going to take a lot of hard work this next week and the coming weeks. And these are good teams, so we're gonna need to compete. But we definitely have the team; we can put it together.
All right, I'm gonna let you get to class. But Henry, thank you so much for joining us on the Bobcast, Male Bobcat of the Week, and the main Rookie of the Week just announced today. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
The softball team opened their season down in Florida with 9 games last week. The Bobcats won a pair of them as they gear up for NESCAC play, which begins this Saturday with a doubleheader at Tufts. Sophomore Kennedy Jones had a big week for the Bobcats, going 10 for 25 at the plate for a .400 batting average with a home run and a team-high 5 runs batted in. Jones also caught 2 runners stealing in 6 chances behind the plate, playing airless defense and allowing just 1 pass ball. And she is our female Bobcat of the Week. Well, Kennedy, your second year as a Bobcat, hit .400 there on the trip to Florida to get the season started for the softball team. Kind of take me through maybe some things you're working on year one to year two based on what you learned about, you know, college softball and the NESCAC, maybe specifically last year.
Yeah, I think my goal coming into sophomore year was to give a different look in the box. You know, coach had kind of told me that it's going to look a little different for you this year. People are going to pitch to you maybe a little differently, you know, and I didn't want that to be an obstacle for me. So me and Coach Ali kind of worked over the 10 non-traditional practice that we had to be able to look a little bit different, stepping into the box, maybe more calm, a little bit more put together.
Gotcha. Now, you had a home run down there in Florida. Take us through that at-bat specifically.
I remember that I felt good going into the at-bat. I think I was kind of mishitting a couple balls, but my swing felt fine. And then stepped in the box, and she threw me a good pitch, and I just felt like I put a good swing on it and just kind of kept going. I was like, okay.
How tricky is it to go from, you know, practicing indoors here at Bates mostly, or maybe a little bit outdoors, but and then going down and playing in Florida? It's a totally different environment, obviously. What was that transition kind of like? You've experienced it before, but take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, so I feel like I kind of have an advantage in that way because of where I'm from. So we play outside all year round.
Right, yep.
But I will say that the team does look different from gray cage to the dirt, and I think that we just have to keep in mind that we're not supposed to be playing our best softball in March, but it's supposed to be in May, you know? So I think that the difference is definitely there, but I don't want to use that as an excuse for the way that we perform. I think that we are going to knock the rest off and just kind of keep going through the rest of the year.
You got some road games coming up in NESCAC play starting this weekend. So what are your thoughts on starting off right away with a doubleheader against number 14 nationally ranked Tufts there on Saturday?
I mean, I'm not going to say that it's not going to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, I think all of our NESCAC games are a challenge, but yeah. I think last year we kind of showed people not to count us out. We took one from Tufts last year.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, the Florida games that we played prepared us well for NESCAC. So I think that if we come out and compete, like, all of the games are up in the air for who's going to win them.
Now, not only, obviously, are you a strong hitter for the Bobcats, you do a lot of catching for Bates. And Delaney Rankin, obviously, is back, but you're working with 3 new pitchers, including LMR, who plays some shortstop as well for the Bobcats. But take us through working with these 4 pitchers this year. What are you kind of working on, you know, in practice and developing that chemistry?
Yeah, so we have a pitching coach this year.
Yep.
Who has been, Coach Green, who's been really helpful, I think, for our pitching staff. The freshmen want the ball, which is something that is exciting as a sophomore catcher. I think that it's hard to catch a pitcher who doesn't want to throw, you know. So all of them wanting the ball has been really helpful for that. And then also just being able to work with my other catchers and, like, what they see as freshmen from, like, because I feel like that relationship is different than as a returner for the freshmen. So I think that that helps a lot, just being able to have a catching staff as well to talk with them and see, like, oh, like, what pitch was working with her today, or what did you say to her that really made her throw well? I think that's been really helpful.
Yeah, one of the key games down in Florida, 4-0 win over Washington and Jefferson, where Delaney threw a complete game shutout. You were doing catching, and actually that was the game where you already hit the home run. What was Delaney maybe working for her specifically in the circle in that particular contest, do you recall?
Yeah, so I might not give you specific pitches because you're going into NESCAC.
Yeah, we don't need to hear any scouting reports for the other team.
Right, but I think that she was moving the ball really well.
Yeah.
She's definitely started to throw harder this year. She was throwing hard last year. I think mm-hmm. she just kind of came into this year, worked hard in the gym, and is throwing harder. So that's really good to see. And she just competes but keeps it fun, which I think is good for our team, especially how you said we haven't been on the dirt in a while. So to have somebody with a lot of energy in the circle ignites the defense and makes them want to play behind her.
And then you being a sophomore catcher, we also have a first-year catcher who has arrived this season and who had a good trip in Florida. Also, tell us about Zaria Anderson.
Zaria is a powerhouse behind the plate. I think that we knew, or I knew, that she was really athletic when she got here. Mm-hmm. And hitting with her specifically has been super fun. Yeah. Her and Bo, just because I think that they challenge me in the box, especially at practice. And I think that we keep each other on our toes. I think one of Zaria's strengths is she can block. It's really comforting when you're DP as a catcher to know that the other catcher knows how to play well behind the plate. And I think that both of them play super well. Like, there's no worry from me.
Excellent. And now, we talked about this before, but you're from Mississippi. We don't get a ton of people from Mississippi at Bates. So what's it, you know, been like, you know, coming to college in Maine, you know, now and entering year two? I'm sure you're used to this weather we're having now at this point, but tell us a little about maybe some of the other adjustments you've made, perhaps.
Well, I feel like my teammates will laugh at this, but the biggest adjustment is there's no sweet tea up here.
Okay.
That's so funny, but I think that's the biggest one, and the food's different. But I think for me, it's just trying to find things that remind me of home up here, and I think my teammates and my coaches have done a good job of being that for me. And then remembering, like, why I chose to come up here, and that, like, Bates is a great academic institution, and that not softball isn't second for me, but, like, that it goes hand in hand, and I can't put one to the side to focus on another one. I feel like that's been a big deal this year.
Yeah, so what are you studying here at Bates?
I'm a biology major.
Okay, biology, nice. What attracted you to that field?
I think I really like the facts. I like to be able to look at data and say, okay, this is what happened. Where do we go from here? I think you can see that in the way that I play, too. Mm. I think we always laugh. It's so funny that everybody's always, like, smiling and laughing, and I'm, like, always super serious on the field, so it's something I've been trying to work on this year. But yeah, I would say, like, the data, the facts, I really enjoy it.
Well, I remember last year, I think unfortunately you got injured there before the NESCAC tournament, but you were there supporting teammates and you had a hat of some,
yeah,
some personality there. Tell us about that, you know, kind of supporting the teammates when you couldn't play, maybe.
Yeah, I think that it's a valuable experience for anybody. Obviously, getting another injury before NESCACs isn't exactly how I wanted that to go. But it was really great to see my teammates, like, not skip a beat. I think that speaks to the culture of our program, that, like, one person doesn't make the team, but the culture, like, will withstand people graduating, which I think is super cool. I think for me personally, I had to just make myself be others focused really quickly, and Coach McKay really helped me with that and helped me find a job. Like, her thing right after the Williams games was like, okay, so we have to pivot from here.
Mm-hmm.
Find a way for you to be helpful if you're not on the field. And I think that looked like charting pitches for me and just really using the eyes that I would have used myself in the box to help my teammates hit pitches that maybe, like, were unfamiliar with or something like that. So I think that was kind of my role, and just being eyes and trying to be positive and not make it about me that I wasn't able to play, because we had to go play NESCAC games, and, I mean, we did pretty well. So
yeah, got the semifinals last year for the first time in program history. But tell us about the hat. What's the story there? It was like a cowgirl hat or something? Or?
No, so that's funny. So obviously, I'm from the South.
Yeah.
I love the hat. The hat is actually like a rally cap.
Oh, okay.
It says Hum Now Cats.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I kind of made it my own.
Yeah.
And I didn't take it off for all of NESCAC. I think it was just like a marker of me in the dugout. But I think it just kind of showed that my teammates, I kind of felt like that was them, like, appreciating that I was there. Mm. And then for me, it was me showing them that, like, yeah, I'm here. Like, I'm ready to be a hype girl. Like, whatever you needed to be to win NESCAC games, like, that's what I want to be for you guys. So.
And one thing you mentioned last year when we had you on is that you do some film study when possible. So have you done any film study on the Jumbos coming up?
Even better, I got to watch them play in person.
Oh, even better, yeah.
In Florida.
Nice,
so
okay.
I think that they have a lot of returners, and that's going to be something that we don't have. So I think that that's going to be maybe an interesting thing for us, is that, like, how do our freshmen step into the box ready to play first NESCAC game, you know? So I think that softball is softball, so we'll see. I think we saw most the majority of their pitching, to my knowledge, last year. I know that we saw two different pitchers, maybe three. And, you know, we handled them pretty well. I feel like the first game and then the second game, things kind of got away from us. But I think this year the goal is to compete in every single NESCAC game that we play. So I think that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Excellent. The Bobcats are at Tufts on Saturday. It's a doubleheader starting at 1 p.m. there. A lot of road games to start the season. We'll finally be home on April 13th against Hamilton for a doubleheader in NESCAC action. And then you got quite a few home games on the back end of the schedule. What are your thoughts on that? You know, when nicer weather will come in, we'll be out there on Lafayette Street Field, right?
I think that it's kind of a blessing in disguise because we got so much snow, so it would be hard to play on our field
sure.
right now.
Yes.
But also I think that, like, if you're playing your best softball at the end of the year, you want your home fans to be able to come and see it, you know? So I think that playing NESCAC games at home is something that's really exciting because our fan support has been pretty good in the past year. So I think that I'm excited to play on our home field and just excited to represent Bates.
Absolutely. All right. Candy Jones, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
The lacrosse teams both picked up non-conference wins last Wednesday as the men's team defeated Maine Maritime Academy 16-8, and the women's team scored their most goals in one game since 2006 in a 23-15 win over Plymouth State. Junior Caroline Taggart had a big game for the Bobcats, scoring 5 goals and dishing out 3 assists as Bates improved to 3-4 on the season. Well, Caroline, a big offensive performance from the Bobcats against Plymouth State last week. 23 goals, that's the most for the team in one game since 2006, and you had 5 of them, plus 3 assists. What was really opening up for you, maybe specifically on offense and the team in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a really good game for us. What was especially nice, I feel like, on offense was we had 3 left-handed players on the left side, which was super nice. We practiced some offensive motions and sets that got us really ready for the game, and it was really exciting to see kind of that work we've been putting in this year, but then in years past as well, with these sets really play off in this game and have a really explosive offense was exciting for sure.
I was going to say, head coach Renee Dowda, you know, I was at practice the other day talking to, she was talking about, you know, trying new things, you know, maybe experimenting, don't worry if it's not working right away. Tell me a little bit about that in terms of the team's philosophy kind of this season.
Yeah, I think we've been kind of grounded on these sets and plays for the past couple years, but something that's really important to her this year is kind of experimentation and being creative and not feeling that you need to stay set in what she's given us. So I think having that kind of freelance mindset and being more creative has definitely been really important to us in seeing that success.
And how has your role on the team changed, or is it similar to maybe from this year to last year?
I think we've got a lot of really strong offensive players this year. We're really all working together in more dynamic ways. We're not set in specific places around the 12, for instance. I mean, we're all kind of moving and we're all taking on different roles every game and every practice, which I think has been really awesome to see. I think every year we're just becoming more and more talented on the offensive end, but also on the defensive end as well.
Yeah, so you're a junior now, right?
Yes.
So do you see yourself kind of in more of a leadership role now that you're an upperclassman? How has that kind of gone with some of the younger players coming in?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's crazy to see kind of, I can't believe I'm already a junior. I feel like every year it gets faster and faster, but it's really nice to have so much younger talent and so many great younger role models to me as well, but just people that I can kind of lead, but then that are also leading me in a lot of ways, which is really fun to see.
So for the team, you've got a home game. We're talking on Tuesday. You're going to have a home game in a few hours against
against
Huston. You've had some schedules moving around. How has the team kind of handled that, kind of not, you know, dealing with the weather a little bit, I guess?
It's been actually crazy. I mean, yesterday, only half of the field was plowed, so we were running around some snow, which was really funny, but definitely excited to play Huston on actually our coach's birthday today and also one of our players, which is super fun. It's our last out-of-conference game, and then kind of turning to Trinity this weekend should be super exciting as well.
Yeah, at Trinity on Saturday, a few road games coming up, but you do get to finish the season with 3 straight home games, so that'll be exciting, right?
Yes, for sure.
Because Wesleyan got moved into April.
Yeah, which is also Alumni Day, so that will be fun to have the alumni back for one of our last home games.
Yeah, what are some of the plans for Alumni Day? It was supposed to be this past weekend, obviously.
Yeah, I know we were supposed to have a pretty big tailgate, and a lot of the players from last year were supposed to come back, as well as a couple of the grades prior. So I know we're all really excited for that. We've been talking to the first year so much about the alumni and how excited we are for them to come back, so everyone's really excited to see them and meet them for the first years, too.
Excellent. Well, we talk about this in every sport, but obviously NESCAC play is tough. There's some really good teams. I mean, Middlebury's won the national title, I don't know how many years in a row, stuff like that. So, you know, going from non-conference to NESCAC, I mean, what are some major changes? Because obviously the level of play is so high, it seems like.
Yeah, I think something that we're really trying to do this year in the non-conference games is use it as a way to get ready for our conference games, and it's really a good opportunity to try some things that you might not feel comfortable taking the risk in a conference game. So I think that's really been something important. I know on the defensive end, we're planning on implementing a new defense this afternoon against Husson, which is really exciting. And on offense, we're working on kind of using the players around us to have two-man game, three-man game, and just kind of taking risks. And I know we did that a lot in Plymouth State in particular, and obviously we saw it pay off with the 23 goals. So it's really important to keep that in mind going into these the rest of the season, which will be heavy conference games.
And I believe this is Coach Dowd's third year as head coach also, yes. Right? So your third year in the program, her third year. Have you seen kind of things develop, you know, since your rookie year and now till today?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been really awesome to see kind of the program grow with her as our head coach. I think she's really implemented a lot of new strategy, but also she takes advantage of people's strengths individually, and she really plays to that, which I think is really nice. On the defensive end, we have people in specific spots that are doing specific things, and same on offense, we have people that she's playing them where their tendencies are, and she's really allowing everyone to use each other's strengths to find the most success. And I think we've really seen kind of a growth in terms of some of the games we've played this year in conference versus in past years. We are seeing definitely a change in our team's improvement from years past. And I think that's really exciting to see and really excited for the rest of this year. And then obviously my senior year too. I think it's going to be really great.
Excellent. Any other thoughts you wanted to share on, you know, the season so far, the Plymouth State game, anything we haven't got to talk about you wanted to mention?
Not really. I think really excited for the rest of the season. I think we have some really big games coming up, and hopefully going to get a conference win here shortly. It would be really exciting.
Absolutely. Well, again, the Bobcats, we're hoping to post this podcast by 4 o'clock. So if you're listening right away, I hope you are. 5 o'clock, Bates versus Husson, obviously coming out to Garcelon Field. Also live on the web feed at GoBatesBobcats.com. If you miss out on this home game, a bunch of road games coming up. Bobcats are back home for Senior Day on April 13th against Amherst. Caroline Taggart, thanks so much.
Thank you.
March is National Athletic Training Month, as we look to spread the word about the importance of athletic trainers. At Bates, Associate AD for Athletic Performance Nick Cook heads a group of hardworking athletic trainers who make sure all our athletes in our 31 varsity sports are ready to compete each and every day. Today, Nick joins the Bobcast to give us a behind-the-scenes look at what athletic trainers do, and he tells us why they are so important. Well, it's National Athletic Training Month here on the Bobcast. We're happy to have Nick Cook with us, joining us via Zoom, talking about his career. He's our Associate AD for Athletic Performance here at Bates. And Nick, you went to the University of Vermont, graduated in 2005. Take me through your time in school, and when did you start to think, I want to enter athletic training as my career?
I find myself very fortunate because I had an idea, I think, like myself, like a lot of athletic trainers, I had some exposure. I got some low-level injury in high school. I was fortunate to have an athletic trainer at my high school at the time. And it was something where I had some exposure to an athletic trainer. And I was like, huh, maybe I might want to do that in my career. And when I applied to colleges that had athletic training programs and found my way to Vermont. When I was at UVM, I started on that path and started to learn about it. There's a, you know, I think all athletic training programs typically have some, like, you know, get your toe in the water kind of course that is like a entry level of observation just to try to see what it looks like. And I often tell people every step of the way in my career, all the way from that first, you know, showing up in at Vermont to that first class, I was reaffirmed that, like, this is a career for me. This is something I'm interested in. This is something I want to do. Which is, I acknowledge to everybody, that's pretty rare that you, like, think you might want to do something when you leave high school and you actually find yourself doing it many, many years later. So I'm fortunate that way, where I had great experiences, and every experience I had along the way helped to reaffirm me to saying, yep, this is the thing I want to do, and this is a career. It's a way for me to be involved in athletics, which I love, and a way for me to help and support people in ways like, you know, I was never a great athlete, but I loved athletics. And, you know, I coaching probably wasn't going to be it for me. So this is another way to be involved in athletics, to help support student athletes in their endeavors, and to be, you know, be a professional in a different avenue.
Well, you and I overlapped in the Big Ten a little bit when I was an undergrad at Northwestern. You were a grad student at Purdue, a grad assistant. So you got to experience life in the Big Ten as an athletic trainer, as a grad assistant. Take me through that experience kind of there on the, I like to say, the big stage of the Big Ten.
It was great. And to be honest, I think I was a little bit naive, not really knowing what I was getting into when I did. It was one of those situations where when I was at Vermont, I had an athletic trainer who was there who had did his undergrad at Purdue, and he was like, "Hey, you should look at Purdue." And I didn't know any better. So I did, and I put an application in there for a graduate assistant and able to go there. Fast forward to getting there and just learning through the opportunity. One of the really cool aspects that I think was a huge growth marker for me, UVM hasn't had football in like hundreds of years. Stepping onto a Big Ten football field, it's and in that environment, it really gives you a well-rounded perspective as to, the different aspects of athletic training and the levels of it. The planning that goes into providing medical care on a stage like that. When you have you're in a stadium and you have all the moving pieces to say, all right, we need to do X, Y, and Z in this environment. It's just different. You have to start planning for those then when you're at a high school and you don't have as many logistical challenges and hurdles to get over, more you just have to get people there to help support you. So we have the opposite problem of we have some people there to support you at a on those big stages, but then you have to figure out how you're going to move people out, whether it's emergency, those types of things. So there's lots of logistics, lots of things I learned. I'm again super fortunate to have varied experiences in that way, to be able to have some of those smaller, you got to figure it out because you don't have a lot of resources experiences, all the way to you have a lot of resources at your fingertips, but you have to figure out the logistics of how they all interplay together. And all of that, I think, weaves itself into what I feel like is a pretty gives me a good sense of what's available, what's an opportunity that we can take advantage of. What are things that we can as a profession continue to tap into what's out there? Because it's a field that, I mean, man, it changes all the time. Medicine's a field that changes all the time. Athletics is a field that changes all the time. And having some of those resources to fall back on really have been an asset through my career.
Want to follow up on that. What are some of the biggest changes you've noticed in your field since you started to now?
Oh, I mean, something that I bring up all the time because and it dates me a little bit. When I graduated, a big and it's topic around the world, right? Is concussion and head injuries. And when I graduated from undergrad, I had this nice rubric on how to return somebody to play with the concussion. If I do that today, I lose my license to practice.
Right.
So there was that was best practice at the time. We didn't know. The medical community was functioning with that kind of information. And the amount of research and literature has just exploded in the last really 20 years of what we know about head injuries, how they interact. And the reality is we're still a little bit of the tip of the iceberg there. But that really highlights over the course of, even 10 years ago, we're doing things wildly different than we did, than we are now. So, lots of things are similar, but there are lots of things that are changing, and we know more now about how to treat certain conditions. It's not just, hang out and go in a dark room and wait till get better. We're actively managing concussions now, which is something that didn't exist really even 10 years ago. So, I mean, that's an easy topic. There are many. That's an easy topic that I often think back of. There's not a lot of things that you'd say, if I did this, if I did what I knew then, now, I wouldn't be able to continue to do this anymore. I'd actually be in trouble. And that seems like a wide swing, but it's a really important topic. It's an area that I think we're all fortunate to see that growth in the medical community and be a part of that. Athletic trainers are often the people on the front lines around head injuries, where you may be the first person to see it happen, and be able to evaluate that. And those are the roles that make athletic training so valuable and so critical in the secondary schools, in the collegiate setting. and in the professional setting. So they're able to evaluate those things in real time and see it and have the context as to what's happening, because it's not an easy thing to report, and there no two concussions are the same. So it's an area where athletic trainers have been leading in that field in the last 20 years as well. So it's been it's fun to see. It's fun to see those consensus statements come out. And the key people at those are often athletic trainers who are doing research in different areas. That's been a fun area to kind of see it not only develop, but develop with athletic trainers helping to drive it forward.
Great. And then you were at Hobart, obviously, for a number of years, and then had the opportunity to come back to your home state, right? To come to
Absolutely.
Bates in 2018 was returning home a big factor. What else kind of drew you to Bates coming from Hobart, going from one D3 school to another?
I think coming home is certainly a factor. I have family here, and it's nice to get back to your own state. They're, thinking about opportunities. A Division III NESCAC institution is something that, is desirable. But I'd also say, as you look at my really long title, one of the things that I was looking for is the ability to have more impact on a holistic view, and to be able to take. I feel like medicine has been moving in that direction, and it was something that I find interesting and something that I want to continue to push forward. And we've already made good ground here as well. But athletic performance is something that it requires so much more than just a just working out and practicing. There are so many pieces to being an athlete, and particularly being a student athlete in a collegiate setting, that we have an opportunity to help educate, help promote, help support people through, all the various things that go into being an athlete at this level, and also, learning new things. I was fortunate to have a conversation this morning with our nutritionist, and we were talking about how this may be the first time some students have to are choosing all of their own food
Yeah.
entirely,
Right.
and how to make choices. And those are things, as you really think grand scale, it's like, oh, well, what are we doing to try to help support them through that? What are the choices that may help them and actually help them to be good students and be good student athletes and be healthy and have, be feel supported in that? And it's more than, the X's and O's of it are a factor, but thinking about that whole view, the whole student, has been something that drew me to this position, because it was more than just the head of sports medicine. It was that performance piece of it really is all encompassing, and helps to give me the platform to help lobby and leverage athletics in different spaces to say, how can we be thinking about the whole student and their well-being at all the levels? Because we do know that anybody who has all of those facets attended to of their life, all the dimensions of, like, if they're feeling well socially and they're feeling well physically and they're feeling well emotionally, they're going to be a better athlete. They're going to perform at a higher level. And those are the things that we're trying to find ways of, how do we support students so they get to that mark, so they're able to be their best version of themselves, both on and off the field.
What's something about the athletic training field that people don't really know that you wish they did?
Oof. I mean, that's a great question. I feel like I could probably run a laundry list of things. I think athletic training is an area, so it's gone, it's an area that has grown exponentially in its time. So, early days of athletic training was, it was a lot of, like, water and taping ankles and those types of things. And I think some of that hangs on a little bit, and people don't understand, the depth of education and knowledge. And the education has actually grown quite a bit as well. Athletic training's now at a master's level, like for a minimum qualification, where it used to be lower and lower levels. At one point, it was the certification course. You, like, took a couple of days on a course, and you're like, oh, great, I can call myself an athletic trainer. Lots of things have transitioned. Now, most states have licensure, where you are a licensed healthcare practitioner. You're a licensed athletic trainer, and their role in the healthcare system is one that that I think more and more people are starting to acknowledge and realize and see. You have athletic trainers working in, in doctor's offices now and working alongside physicians and supporting them even in the surgeries and those types of things. And so the knowledge that athletic trainers possess in lots of areas have afforded them more opportunities in the healthcare world. And not everybody has a full understanding that an athletic trainer's education is a full-blown healthcare practitioner. It's the it may be, I pair it in some ways. It's similar to a physical therapist, or it's similar to a physician assistant in some ways, and it's not any one of those things, but there are pieces of all of that that make up an athletic trainer. We tend to be a little bit of those glue people in between all of those different areas, where we're kind of doing creating the connection, like all of that connective tissue for, I'd say even in student athletes here, it's like, well, we're communicating with physical therapists, we're doing some of that work and helping to drive it forward. We're communicating with the physician and helping them in their evaluation and driving things forward. We're communicating in all of those areas with all of those healthcare practitioners to again help to get to the best result for those student athletes so that they have the best experience, and they are able to, end goal is to be the best versions of themselves.
I was going to say, yeah, you interface a lot with, physicians and whatnot. How does that kind of operate? Because you're on the ground every day with the student athletes, but I know the physicians obviously can't be.
And that's, I think that's where it's invaluable, and athletic trainers can be invaluable because we provide and we have really great relationships. We have a partnership with Central Maine, Healthcare, where we have our team physicians are contracted through them, and they come to campus, and we have good communication there. Where a lot of times, we're referring people over, we're referring them with context and information that. Really helps them in their evaluation process because we're able to say, I've been seeing this person for a week, or I saw them right when it happened, and this is what I saw. And that information, from a clinician who knows what we're looking at and knows what we may be seeing in that moment, can be really helpful. Whether when there isn't somebody there to provide that information, you're relying on a student who just got hurt. They're feeling all the feelings, and you're asking them to say, hey, so what happened here, and how did that feel, and what would this look like, and those types of things. And you don't always get the best recall. So we're able to fill in those blanks. We're able to provide our assessments in addition to their own, in addition to the student athletes, their account of what happened. And I find that when you wrap all those things together, or you get to the answers a whole lot faster. You're able to basically say, all right, with all of this information, we can say, all right, this is the direction we need to go, or this is, what do we need to do from here? Usually a lot quicker. There's and I know that our team physicians and the physicians we work with, they're constantly coming back to us and being like, all right, so this is what I heard from the student athlete. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? And that really flows both ways. So we're providing that information. And then they're also coming back and saying, this is what we're seeing. What are you seeing? And we're able to have that collaborative environment. And that kind of environment is where everybody wins because you have people sharing ideas and talking about what they're seeing. And when all those things start to align, outcomes are typically at their best.
Now, part of your job here is obviously you're managing a team of athletic trainers. You're the head of the group, if you will. So, how about when you're looking for athletic trainers to join the staff, when you're when you're supervising their work, what are you kind of looking for from a good athletic trainer?
Oh, I think, well, first and foremost, we have phenomenal staff here at Bates, and I am fortunate to work with these folks every day. They make my job so much easier and much more fun to do every day because they are just exceptional professionals. They're great at what they do. They're great at interfacing with the student athletes. And when we're out there looking for new staff, we're having conversations about, being a good team member. We want people who are going to come in and be able to work in those collaborative environments like we just talked about, whether it's with our physicians or amongst ourselves, where we're able to really leverage our team approach to say, what do you think? Or what do you see here? How can you help me in my evaluation of this? What have you seen in your career? And we use each other's strengths to help strengthen the whole unit. And that aspect where we can rely on each other and we can really have a team and collaborative approach, those types of things, they support our student athletes. You know, if somebody's not able to be in that day, there's somebody else that's right there ready to step in, and we communicate well together where it doesn't feel like you're starting from zero every time. And that kind of environment is one that, you have to be able to plug into. You gotta be able to communicate. You gotta want to communicate with your peers, and you gotta want to be on a team. It can be really easy to be like, here's my silo. Here are the list of things that I need to get accomplished today. But we're looking for people who really want to be in that collaborative environment where they share in kind of that holistic view, and they want to see student athletes get the best care regardless of where it comes from or how it comes to them. And again, really that same concept of we want to help people get to the best versions of themselves and get to see them be successful.
Excellent. Well, any other thoughts you wanted to share on, athletic training? We haven't got to talk about it being National Athletic Training Month. Any other messages you want to get out there for people? I know, there's obviously, I think probably, short staff in general kind of in the profession right now, but any other thoughts you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I think, we're athletic training, like I mentioned before, they've been going under a transition in their education and their educational model, which I think ultimately would be good, but any transition like that's going to have an impact on people who are graduating from those programs and where they land. And there's kind of we're at a moment in time where there's a lot of positions out there and the athletic trainers to fill those positions are few. And that can be attributed to lots of different things. There are more opportunities to athletic trainers to go in different jobs. People are realizing the value of athletic trainers. There are more in high schools than there ever have been before, more of those positions available. They're in doctor's offices in ways that they haven't been before, working in lots of different healthcare avenues. And so they're in demand. There are lots of people in a collegiate setting. It used to be the pinnacle where people were looking for it. Now they're having much more option. And being able to be productive and feel valued in lots of avenues, you see athletic trainers going in different directions. So we're in a spot now where we're trying to, again, keep recruiting good athletic trainers who have an interest in being in this environment, working on a team, and developing, growing in their career. And that's a special moment. And I think those bonds and people who love athletic training, they see those things and say, I want to be a part of somebody, in different way, but same kind of thing. The National Athletic Training Month, slogan is a head to toe kind of care, which is that holistic that we're talking about. I also think of it as a little bit from that A to Z in the collegiate setting. The thing that's most fortunate for us is we're able to see somebody when they first have that moment, all the way through to when they return to the field and they're able to perform again. And there's nothing that gives more satisfaction than seeing somebody, have that moment and you really feel for them and you're able to help support them in it. But it's they're injured. Something happened. It's not the thing that anybody wants, but then also be able to walk them through that whole process, whether it involves surgery or physical therapy or all of the above, be able to walk them through that process, see them grow and develop through that process, and then see them get back on the field doing the thing that they love. That's just one of those things that I think every athletic trainer has a story like that, or many stories like that, that helps to keep you going. It's the thing that we all love. It's the thing that we look for. And it's the thing that helps to, that's the goal. That's really what it comes down to, is being able to support people to get to that spot. And, as we as we're in this month and there's some recognition that comes our way, athletic trainers are typically people who like to stay in the shadows a little bit and do their work and that. And I think that having that opportunity to acknowledge that these are the folks that are there in the hard times and help to carry people through all the way back to get back to play. And that's the, you know, it's really the part that that people enjoy about this career. So we're hoping to continue that. We're hoping to keep on, you know, highlighting those things and supporting our student athletes all the way through. And it's a great platform to do it here in college athletics.
All right, Nick Cook, Bates College Associate AD for Athletic Performance. Thank you so much for joining us on the Bobcast and happy National Athletic Training Month.
Thank you, Aaron.
This Saturday, men's lacrosse will welcome back members of the 1984 team that went 11-1 for their alumni game at Garcelon Field. Bates hosts Trinity at 1 p.m. and the only home game this upcoming weekend for Bates. But lots of teams are in action on the road, and you can find the complete schedule at GoBatesBobcats.com. We'll recap all the excitement as March turns to April next time on the Bates Bobcast.